on this week's Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Which horse made the big move of the week? Here's a hint. The horse did not run in the Mid-Atlantic last weekend. And we'll have our Win Play Show news segment, three stories that were in the money. In the show spot, the Blue Collar Breeders' Cup. In the play spot, a feast fit for King, literally. And in the win spot, not the Blue Collar Breeders' Cup. Stay tuned for this week's Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. On the Racing Biz Radio. I'm Frank Vespi, and I'll be your host today as we check out racing around the Mid-Atlantic and all over the country. Special thanks to our sponsors, the Virginia Thoroughbred Association and the Virginia Equine Alliance, making Virginia racing history. Maryland Jockey Club, owners of Laurel Park and Pimlico, home of the Preakness. The Maryland Horse Breeders Association and Maryland Million Limited, Maryland, we grow horses. Street Magician, the promising sire standing at Heritage Stallions. Comlow Insurance, your course for all horse insurance. The Delaware Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, representing Delaware's horsemen. West Virginia Breeders Classic, celebrating 29 years of West Virginia bred racing. And Facing Tipton Sales Company. Thanks to all. Stay tuned for today's podcast. You are listening to the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. I'm your host, Frank Vespi, and now it's time for our big move of the week. Which horse made the big move of the week? As I said earlier, it's not a horse that ran in the Mid-Atlantic region. Virginia bred Stellar Wind began her career at the Laurel Park barn of veteran trainer Donald Barr, broke her maiden locally, and then was sold to California and running out of the barn of John Sadler. This past weekend on Friday, she ran in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, making a big late move to get to second, but could not get by Stop Charging Maria, who floated that horse out. There was a steward's inquiry and an objection, but Stop Charging Maria remained in first. But Virginia bred Stellar Wind gets our move of the week. Here's what it sounded like when announcer Larry Colmus called it.
Stop Charging Maria's right at Infinite and Carolina and Sheer Drama. And it is wide open at the top of the stretch of the Vista. There's five horses across the track here. Stop Charging Maria and Stellar Wind up on Jump Cup. And then it's Yahilwa. Sheer Drama is trying to close in late. Stop Charging Maria, Stellar Wind on the outside. These two will decide the distance. Stop Charging Maria, Stellar Wind. Stop Charging Maria has won.
With her big effort, Stellar Wind likely sealed her position atop the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, the Racing Biz Top Mid-Atlantic Bred Poll for 2015, and she receives our big move of the week for this week. Stellar Wind is a three-year-old filly by Curlin out of the Malibu Moon Mare Evening Star. She was bred in Virginia by Keswick Stables and Stone Street Thoroughbred Holdings. She's owned by Ronus Racing LLC and trained by John W. Sadler and was ridden in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, where she ran second, by Victor Espinosa. Congrats to all connections on a job well done. Stellar Wind, the winner of our big move of the week on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Are listening to the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Let's turn our attention now to our Win Play Show segment, three stories that were in the money this week in horse racing. In the show spot of this week's Win Play Show segment, the Blue Collar Breeders' Cup. Claiming Crown Preview was held Sunday at Laurel Park. Wait a minute, what's that? What's the Claiming Crown? It's funny you should ask that, because that was a question on a lot of minds over the weekend. Claiming Crown is a series of starter allowance races that are going to be held at Gulfstream Park. Starter allowances are races restricted to horses that have run for specified claiming prices. These carry a big purse, which is why they're sometimes called the Blue Collar Breeders Cup. It's going to be held at Gulfstream Park on the opening day of the Gulfstream Championship meet, which is December 5th. On Sunday at Laurel Park, they held a series of races for horses to qualify for those races, each winner getting a free passage to Gulfstream Park for the Claiming Crown and getting entry in the Claiming Crown races. Winners of the two biggest races, Roman Approval took the $50,000 turf race by a head over Ghost Hunter. And in the Jewel preview, the Jewel being the biggest race, the mile and an eighth race on the dirt, IndyCot, New York Shipper for Danny Gargan with Trevor McCarthy up, won also by a head over Mr. Palmer with Victor Carrasco up. So that's the Blue Collar Breeders' Cup. Claiming Crown preview day was last Sunday at Laurel Park, and the Claiming Crown itself will be December 5th at Gulfstream.
In our place segment, a beast fit for king, literally fit for king. Ted Black from the Maryland Racing Media Association is going to join us in a moment to discuss the association's annual Crab Feast Awards Ceremony and Scholarship Presentation, which is coming up Saturday at Laurel Park in the carriage room at 6 o'clock following live racing and is open to the public. Hey, Ted Black, are you there?
I am, Frank. Thanks for having me on again.
Yes, thanks for joining us. So we have a feast literally fit for king coming up on Saturday. Is that correct?
It is the annual Maryland Racing Media Association Crab Feast at the carriage room at Laurel Park. And one of the well-deserved award recipients is King himself, King T. Leatherberry, who got in the Hall of Fame earlier this year and is one of our recipients of the Dale Austin Newsmaker Award for 2015.
Now, who else is going to be getting awards at this event?
Typically, Frank, we have one award winner for the Humphrey S. Finney, and that is going to, which is the association's biggest award for those who may not know, but the Humphrey S. Finney is for Lifetime Achievement, so that's considered our biggest award. That's going to Richard Golden, and with a special acknowledgement to Not For Love, who stood at Northview Stallion Station for about 15 years, was clearly the top sire in Maryland during that time, was leading sire in the nation four different years, and was recently pensioned. So since been retired from stud duties. Really, we can't acknowledge one without the other. So Richard Golden from Northview Stallion Station and Not For Love, the retired stallion, basically winners of our Humphrey S. Finney Award for Lifetime Achievement.
And are you giving out other awards as well?
And getting back to King, Frank, King T. Leatherberry is one of two co-recipients of the Newsmaker Award. Usually we have one, but this year we made an exception just for the simple fact that King was inducted into the Hall of Fame on the same day that a very talented filly that used to run at Laurel quite a bit debuted at Laurel and won numerous races there, including the Barbara Fritchie twice, Extra Heat, was inducted into the National Racing Hall of Fame back in August. So, yeah, we opted to make both of them sort of our co-recipients of the Dale Austin Newsmaker Award, since they both certainly made news by getting into the Hall of Fame this year. So I know King is going to be there, and I imagine Ken Taylor and the connections of extra heat will be there as well to get their award. They do each get one award, even though obviously it's considered shared, but they're each getting a trophy. And then certainly last but not least, our last award is called the Nancy Alberts Achievement Award. And that's going to Bruce Quaid, chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, who has certainly done an admirable job, since taking over as chairman of the commission. And the award named in honor of Nancy Alberts, the late great trainer in Maryland, who of course saddled Magic Wisner to several stakes wins and a runner-up finish in the Preakness Stakes at age three when he had just an exceptional year for Nancy.
And for people who have not had the pleasure of hearing King Leatherbury speak before, it's a little like having Henny Youngman reincarnated. So that's always good for a chuckle.
Yeah, Ken, the King obviously can liven up a room with his impromptu stand-up. You know, he does it completely on his own. Doesn't bring a script, doesn't bring cue cards, just gets up there and wings it, and certainly worthy of a number of good laughs during his brief speeches and joke-telling abilities. So I'm sure he'll provide plenty of entertainment for the gathering Saturday night.
I think that's probably right. Now, I understand you're also going to be raising some money with a silent auction and so forth. What are you guys raising the money for?
The silent auction goes toward the Maryland Racing Media Association Backstretch Scholarship. And each year we typically have anywhere from 12 to 15 scholarship winners. And the scholarship is open to young men and women who work on the backstretch at one of the tracks or training centers, on a breeding farm. Basically, you know, any association with the Maryland racing industry in regard to taking care of horses anywhere throughout the state within the past year. And they're enrolled in school this coming fall semester. At any college or university, it could be a major school like the University of Maryland, or it could be a community college. It doesn't matter. We don't differentiate. And this year we did have 12 winners, and I believe they're going to take home a collective sum of right around $20,000. And over the years, since I've been a part of the association and on the Backstretch Scholarship Committee, the last 15 years, I believe we've given out close to 400,000 in scholarships, and any item that purchased at the auction on Saturday night will go toward that fund. So it's a good cause, and there's a number of really good items on the sheet. So hopefully people will find something worthy of purchasing and know that their money's going to a good cause on the Backstretch Scholarship Fund.
Now, if I'm a member of the public and I'm at the races Saturday and I say, you know what, crabs sound about right, I want to go to a big crab feast and support a good cause, can I just walk up and buy a ticket?
Yes, you can, actually. No need to make reservations in advance. The event is open to the public, and essentially it's $60 per ticket for the crab feast. All you can eat crabs all night, a number of really good items on the menu. And in addition to that, desserts, drinks, open bar. It's completely open bar. It's not a paid bar, so drinks are included in the ticket price. And if you want to bring an entire group, get a table for 10, give you a little bit of a discount, and you get the table for 10 for $550. So it's always a good time. Plenty of crabs, plenty of food, drinks, desserts. Number of really worthy award recipients, not just from us, the individuals and horses that we selected, but also the dozen Backstretch Scholarship Award winners that'll be getting their checks on Saturday night.
Nice. Well, there you have it. So it's a great party for a great cause. Maryland Racing Media Association's annual Crab Feast coming up Saturday night, 6 o'clock at Laurel Park in the carriage room. Ted Black, president of the Maryland Racing Media Association, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on board again, Frank.
This is the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio, and in the win spot of our Win Place Show news segment, the not-so-blue-collar Breeders' Cup. The real Breeders' Cup was held this past weekend at Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky, and our Virginia correspondent Nick Hahn was on the grounds and now is joining us on the Off to the Races podcast. Nick, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks, Frank. Yeah, it was quite a weekend in Lexington, Kentucky last week.
Yeah, you were you made the drive down there, got there, caught some morning works on Friday, and I understand it was a little dark and a little cold.
Yeah, it was dark. It didn't get light till about a quarter to eight or so before the sun came out. It was really overcast. And it was a little disappointing for some of the fans that had come out on Friday hoping to catch a glimpse of American Pharoah. They had to pay attention to Baffert, who was up in the stands. It was so dark that he wasn't even wearing sunglasses on that Friday morning. And they had to kind of pay attention to him because he had his eyes on American Pharoah with Ahmed Zayat and they were watching. He took one little gallop around the track, and if you weren't paying attention, you missed him because they were stabled on the backstretch, and he just kind of came galloping by in the dark and pointed him out to a couple people that were standing around me. Not that I could see him up the track. I was just reading the eyes of Baffert up in the stands. And what a performance he had. One thing – yeah, very impressive win, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I'll give you a few things about American Pharoah in a moment. But it really helped me on Friday to go see the workout, what I could see of it, because at Keeneland, they actually keep a lot of the building dark. They keep the press box dark, and so you don't get a lot of ambient light onto the racetrack. It must have had some incidents before, or something about the nature of the track. Maybe the grandstand's too close to the track. They didn't want distractions for the horses on the track. One thing you could see was FNX. FNX was just galloping and galloping and galloping around the racetrack on Friday morning, and you could hold a matchup to that horse on Friday morning. And just seemed to be quite a specimen, kind of showed, he shined through the darkness a little bit. And I used him in my trifecta. I wish I would have put him in my exacta. I tried to play something pretty straight, and I tried to stick with the tip sheet. But I had him second place on a trifecta ticket and almost brought that home. I missed Honor Code in third spot for some dumb reason. But FMX looked pretty good on the racetrack on Friday, enough to where I started putting him in my exotics, even though he was the second longest horse on the board. It almost came through for me. But it was over 40,000. I think it was the largest crowd in Keeneland history. Pretty much a well-behaved crowd, very enthusiastic crowd there at Keeneland, and what a performance by American Pharoah. In my opinion, he is clear-cut going to be sports figure of the year. Now, if you want to go to sports person of the year or sports man of the year, maybe you look, or sports woman of the year, you got Serena Williams, you got Jordan Spieth, who was a great golfer this year, had a great year. The Cubs were sort of there looming in the World Series. Or trying to get to the World Series in the playoffs there. But clearly, to me, who has had a better year than American Pharoah? At the end of the year, I think he's clear cut. I can't find anybody. I'll argue anybody and defend American Pharoah as Sports Figure of the Year.
Well, he's had an unbelievable year, as you say. And talk a little bit. You had a piece up sort of touching on this on the racingbiz.com earlier this week. Talk a little bit about what the emotion in the building was like with American Pharoah in the Classic and winning the Classic and kind of putting the cherry on top of the sundae of the unbelievable year he has had. I mean, what did that feel like to be there?
I think Kentucky being where it is, knowing that he was going to stay in Kentucky, actually in Lexington, I forget the mileage, but, you know, he's a handful of miles from where he had his last race. You know, Kentucky was ready to embrace him. They had seen what he had done before. When he came back after winning that race easily, did a little bit of a parade like you saw in the Belmont Stakes. The crowd was reacting to it. It wasn't quite the scene. It was half the crowd, of course, that you saw at Belmont back in early June. But, you know, they were geared up. There were it was Halloween, so you can just imagine the number of pharaohs you saw you know, walking through the crowd. there, and the paddock was absolutely packed. The one thing I would – Keeneland was a pretty good place to hold the races other than it was just a little bit too small. And if the Breeders' Cup were to ever come back, I'd like for it to, you know, maybe be a little bit more accommodating in terms of the size. But it was manageable. It was probably just the right number of people. I would have hated to put another 2,000 or 3,000 more in there. But it was – as we watched the horse, I think the race was over at the 3/16th pole the first time he went around. He got some very advantageous, you know, kind of luck of the racing gods help when Smooth Roller and Beholder and Liam's Map went into another race. And so I think that, you know, things were going his way. But as I wrote in the Racing Biz piece, you know, that's the way great ones kind of create their own fate. And I don't really think it would have mattered if those horses were in the race. He ran the best race of his career. And, you know, Bob Baffert, after the race with Zayat and Victor Espinoza, you know, they were in the press conference with their families, with the Zayat stable manager Justin there and Baffert bouncing Bodie on his knee. You know, they were very emotional after the race. He's on uncharted turf here. The Breeders' Cup Classic wasn't around when Secretariat and Affirmed and Seattle Slough and all the great horses of the 70s or even the 40s were running, and that's going to be his legacy. He beat older horses. He's brought a new term to racing, the Grand Slam. We kind of know a little bit about it here in Virginia with the Grand Slam of Grass. Nobody ever did it. English Channel was pretty close to accomplishing it, but it was just one of those performances. I'm absolutely feel privileged that I got to see him race live three times. And, you know, this horse just has a lot of personality. He's been around horses and people his whole life. He knows how to handle us. And he'd be likable even if he wasn't this good. You know, I think a lot of people still like him. But, you know, he's very special.
Yeah, certainly. I don't think anybody can disagree with you on that. And it was a situation where the best horse also had an advantage in the pace scenario with the scratches that you mentioned, which left American Pharoah not only as the best horse in the race, but also the controlling speed. Now, another horse who didn't get the job done is a horse that we in an earlier segment today named for our big move of the week, is a horse who nevertheless completely burnished her reputation, ran a fabulous race, is the Virginia bred Stellar Wind. Were you rooting for the Virginia bred, Nick? Were you, did you think she was going to get up, or did you think, sort of interesting question as well, did you think she should have been put up by the stewards?
I don't think so. I looked at the replay of that race over and over. I was kind of, I did not, even though I really liked Stop Charging Maria, and I had her, I was using her in the Distaff Classic Double, and actually cashed that ticket with Stop Charging Maria with American Pharoah coming in. But I didn't think it was enough. I actually turned to Joe Drape, who was sitting next to me as we were watching the race, and asked him if they would have taken that horse down in New York. And he said no. You know, I think they made the right decision. But she only has one loss in the year, which was a miserably run Kentucky Oaks, at least miserably run for her. And she, after the race, you know, there was talk from the trainer and the owner about her being the best three-year-old filly in the country. And I think, you know, very similar to American Pharoah, it would be hard to argue against that. Stop Charging Maria, you know, is an older horse there. And you know, she did very well against older horses. It's not as clear cut as American Pharoah. But, you know, this is a horse that's very near and dear to me. She was actually foaled about a mile from my house here in just north of Charlottesville. She was bred in Albemarle County at a farm, you know, and spent a good part of her life, you know, there at Keswick Stable where Peggy Augustus has been. It's her swan song. It's the last horse that she's bringing to the racetrack, so that she bred, that'll be on the racetrack. You know, what a great legacy for that farm and for that entity. But, you know, it's what we're kind of facing here in Virginia. So, yeah, I definitely had heart and a, you know, certain amount of money on Stellar Wind, and look forward to her next race.
Yeah, she ran. I thought a terrific race, really. That was a really exciting race. Are there any we could talk for hours about the Breeders' Cup and a million unbelievable performances, including Liam's Map and Run Happy and Mongolian Saturday and his ownership group, but we don't have hours. But is there anything else or any other sort of highlights that really stood out for you while you were on the grounds at Keeneland Racecourse?
Well, you mentioned Mongolian Saturday. That was by far, you know, one of the most entertaining wins of the day there. When the Mongolians got up there in the winner's circle, there were cheers. And even well after the race, they were, like, walking through the crowd. And I looked, excuse me, you know, back to my left up the track, and I saw the crowd stand up and cheer. You know, and a couple of them sat down, and they just kind of stood up and cheered again. I was kind of scratching, you know, what's going on over here? You know, are they trying to do the wave or something here at Keeneland, or what's going on? And as it turned out, it was the ownership group in their traditional garb that was just walking down the box seat level of the grandstand. And they were getting a standing ovation, and one in their group was waving a little Mongolian flag as they were walking through the group. And, I mean, I'm sure they didn't pay for they probably ate for free the entire weekend the time that they spent in Lexington, because they were by far very entertaining. As people were leaving the racetrack, and I saw a line that had formed, and it was actually people standing in line waiting to get their pictures taken with the ownership group. You know, this was well after they had won their race. And they were certainly colorful. I actually talked to one of the owners, and I asked them, what time is it in Mongolia? And they said, well, it's 2 in the morning. And I said, are people up watching this? And he said, oh, yeah. And he showed me his phone. I mean, they were coming in probably 3 a second, you know, all these texts, congratulations, stuff. And then I asked them about racing in Mongolia. I'm like, what's racing like in Mongolia? And they said, well, you know, usually when we race, it's 25 kilometers. So, you know, you don't want to put them in the marathon. You know, you don't want to go up against the Mongolian horses in the Breeders' Cup Marathon or something. But,
which makes it sort of ironic that Mongolian Saturday actually won the shortest race contested on either card, the 5.5 furlong turf sprint.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was just, you know, that was kind of a, they were certainly the most colorful winner in attire and personality, you know, even maybe more so than the connections of American Pharoah, because we've seen that before. But the, you know, Teppan's win, I think, was pretty remarkable in the mile, because Teppan was 12-1 in the leading American horse in the morning line. Everybody had banked on these Europeans, and I think we learned a little bit about turf racing, European horses, and you know, I heard one, I forget where I heard it, you know, where they were talking about how, you know, most people think the softer going benefits the European horses. And I heard it mentioned that, well, maybe the Europeans send the horses over that run better on the firmer going. And then they ended up with a soft track, and you just really didn't see, other than Found, you know, who was a bit of a surprise. You know, that's a horse I'll kind of remember, too, a little bit as Found, because when he entered the paddock, he had that sheer, he kind of had that bicolor sheer or cut. You know, it was almost like he, you know, he was coming in as a punk rocker or something into the paddock. He looked exceptional. He actually walked right by me in the paddock and whinnied. And, you know, I probably would have put some money on him if it was possible to do so at that time. You know, it was kind of hard to bet, you know, immediately, you know, what you look, you know, you kind of had to do your research and see these horses in the morning, but Found certainly got the paddock award. So yeah, it was a great Breeders' Cup. It turned out extremely well. I don't think anybody was disappointed with the quality of racing, that had happened. And, you know, a little bit of intrigue in the distaff with Stellar Wind and Stop Charging Maria. But other than that, you know, the racing was great.
One of the interesting things, you know, you just mentioned a couple of horses. You mentioned Teppan. You mentioned Found. And that actually raises sort of an interesting point, which is it was a really good weekend to be a filly racing against males on the turf. Teppan, a filly, defeated males in the mile and really laid waste to that field, which was a really good field, as you said, with Make Believe and Esoteric. Found, a 3-year-old filly, beat males in the turf, the mile and a half turf, overcoming the Arc de Triomphe winner, Golden Horn. And Lady Shipman in the turf sprint ran second to Mongolian Saturday. So three distaffers taking on the males in grass races at Keeneland on Breeders' Cup weekend ran really well. So that was kind of an interesting thing. Nick, let's look ahead a day or two. And back home, back in Virginia, they're going to be running over the jumps at a historic course at Montpelier.
Yeah, this is one of the – it's a great event here. It'd be good if they could work in some parimutuel. I think it would add a little bit to the event, but, you know, they're very careful about the prestige of racing on the ground, you know, at basically the home of an American president. They go over the hedges here at Montpelier. It's very beautiful. It's very scenic. It's on the smallest of mountains, but you have great views. They jump over live hedge, which is kind of unique. We're actually trying to find out right now how many steeplechase courses have live hedge. You know, Pride of the Fleet is a horse that's going to be running. That race will actually be on the dirt. They have the training track out there where Woodbury Payne has his horses and, you know, works them out year-round. There are a lot of horses that are racing at Great Meadow, that we're racing at Great Meadow this fall. That'll be out. A horse by the name of Hooping will be out there. But by far, the horse that's going to kind of be the one to watch is going to be in their feature race, the Noel Lang. And that horse is by the name of, Decoy Daddy, who has won this race 4 out of the last 5 years. And, you know, going for 5 out of 6, you know, this is not a slouch race. I think it's a $75,000 race, if I'm reading this right. And, you know, it's 7 races on the card. Actually, it's a $40,000 race. Didn't want to get too far in front of down the road without correcting that. But, you know, this is a horse that is very popular, a 13-year-old gelding, you know, going over hedges here. And, you know, that kind of puts him up there in the neighborhood of, like, Saluter up at the Great Meadow. And you have a horse by the name of Demonstrative, who has been on the steeplechase circuit, it seems like, forever. You know, I've seen that horse, picked him on tip sheets for a long time, making his 45th start. He's nearly won $1 million going over the hedges. So, you know, it's going to be entertaining. It kind of closes out not only the steeplechase circuit, but the Virginia racing circuit. They added a race this week. And so, yeah, it's a colorful cast that's going to be out there, and they attract about 15,000 to 20,000, you know, to this event. And it's they literally race right in front of the Montpelier Mansion there on the grounds, which is on about a 4,000-acre piece of property. The Thoroughbred Retirement Farm runs, you know, they have about somewhere between 50 and 100 horses out there. There's actually a bit of a discouraging story that has just kind of happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks about some horses that were kept nearby that needed to be rescued that has come out. You know, so I'm sure, you know, the horsemen in the area want to put on a good show. You know, and that it's going to be a great day on Saturday. You know, look at MontpelierRaces.org. You can find out more information about it if anyone's interested in going to it. But, yeah, it's I've been there before. It's a great event. It's very scenic. It's kind of just like Great Meadow.
Well, good stuff. Montpelier is the ancestral home it was the home of James Madison, James and Dolly Madison. It was also home much later of part of the DuPont family, and for people who go out there, there's an interesting room that has been recreated to look as it did when the DuPonts owned it, and it's filled with old wind photos from racetracks, many of which don't exist anymore. And so that's kind of a neat little trip through memory lane for horse racing aficionados. Nick Hahn, thank you so much for being on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio today and sharing with us your experiences at the Breeders' Cup. And certainly I think people will look forward to seeing you at Montpelier.
Yeah, I hope some people can come out for it. Great previous weekend to close out, you know, substantially close out the championship races, and looking forward to going over the hedges here. And, you know, somehow racing's going to have to learn to exist without American Pharoah, and there's some great horses coming back to the track, and there's some three-year-olds that are eager to get into that winner's circle outside of American Pharoah, like Keen Ice, like Frosted, and Dortmund, and horses like that. So, yeah, it kind of, you know, American Pharoah is going to leave a void, and there are a lot of people that are going to be eager to fill it. So, enjoy the Breeders' Cup, and you know, look forward to you know, racing in 2016 as well.
All right, sounds good. Nick Hahn, thank you so much.
I am Frank Vespi, and I have been your host today on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Thank you so much for being a part of it today and every day. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors, the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, the Virginia Equine Alliance, the Maryland Jockey Club, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Maryland Million Limited, Comlow Insurance, Street Magician, Facing Tipton Company, Maryland Horse Industry Board, West Virginia Breeders Classics. Thanks so much to all. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in. We'll look forward to seeing you next week on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio as we preview Francis Dash Day at Laurel Park, and we'll look forward to seeing you every day on theracingbiz.com, The Racing Biz, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding.